the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Well, look at there. Here she comes. Here comes that girl again. Wanted to meet her since I don't know when. But she don't notice me when I pass. She goes with older guys from out of my class. The man keeps stopping from my thinking to myself. She's your fine looking man. She's something else.
The great Eddie Cochran, something else. Across the street, there's a car made just for me, and Johnny D. joins us. Good morning.
Stevie, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I think I can hear in your voice, too, the same the same kind of wrung out, post. Big weekend and big week feeling a little bit. We put a coda on Saturday by going to a Yankee game like lunatics. But, Johnny, I thought it was a absolutely fabulous weekend at Pimlico.
I did about 2 weeks ago. I had the flu. And then since then, I've had a persistent cough. And some congestion that I can't get rid of. And then I think my visit to Pimlico and all the festivities and meeting with all of our great players, select players at ExpressBet and other people from the industry that I know for years, and just saying hello to everyone, I think that pushed me over the edge because I spent yesterday in one of those walk-in clinics where you go for salvation. And so I've got some medication that I'm going to see if we can knock this thing out of here. It's been lingering for quite a while, and got to get rid of it. But I was able to soldier on and through the Preakness it was a really enjoyable weekend. I was smidge under the weather, but got through it all fine. Kicking off with the draw on Wednesday evening, which was moved to downtown under wonderful weather conditions, held outdoors. That was great. And then of course Thursday morning, I had the pleasure of joining you and seeing you accept your Old Hilltop Award, which was fantastic. And I thought that besides you winning the award, I thought that the folks at Pimlico did a fantastic job with setting up the banquet room and making it very, very presentable and attractive. And I thought it was the best looking room that I've seen in the many years I've been going there. So that was great. That was a great improvement. The food was spectacular. I got my fried chicken for breakfast. The only day of the year that I have fried chicken for breakfast. And of course, a crab cake on the side, which I don't do that for breakfast either the rest of the year. So that was unique. And then Friday and Saturday, being wrong with my weather forecast, my blanket forecast that says it will rain one day or the other at the Preakness, at Pimlico on Preakness weekend. Thankfully, I was wrong, and it was spectacular. It was a great weekend of weather. People enjoyed themselves. The racing cards were awesome. As far as the field sizes were concerned, both Friday, Saturday, and that exactly is reflected by the weather. You didn't have the scratches. You didn't have a sloppy track to deal with. You didn't have unusual turf conditions to deal with. All things considered, just an outstanding weekend. And you know what? The horse players responded. They did just under $100 million. On Saturday, the largest Preakness Day wagering ever. So it gives you some idea what can happen when you're allowed to get one of our major events in without rain. And as you and I have talked, it's been a while since we've had one of those. Certainly a two-day stretch of no rain has been almost unheard of. You can go all the way back to last year's, I don't mean the just recently concluded Derby, the last year's Derby. It seemed like we had rain throughout the entire year on our most of our big days. So it was nice to see that. And just everyone really, really seemed to be relaxed and enjoying themselves. And again, I have to say that the people at Pimlico, the people who work there, who are part of the regular Laurel team, they go back and forth, Pimlico and Laurel. But then also the volunteers and the people from Maryland who just feel like the Preakness is their race and they love it and they go out of their way to be nice to everyone who comes in. And I think you feel that. You feel it from the time you enter. The only issue I have is with one traffic cop on the way out. I had a minor disagreement, but she won, by the way, because I wasn't going to go that far, but it was a question. Let's put it that way. But other than that, and she was probably right, too, I might add, but I thought an exception could be warranted. You know, it was one of those things where a foul had been committed. I thought you should leave the number up.
No, last week you wanted the number taken down 2 weeks ago.
No, I was going to leave it up, man.
That's right. I'm sorry.
I was going to leave it up, man.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny. It's funny you say this because Sirius. I'm always on Sirius 730 after these races and after the Triple Crown events, and one of the military, you know, they had military personnel also doing, or tactical gear type guys, SWAT guys doing traffic. And guy started yelling at me about being on the phone. But then when I tried to switch it, you know, cause I got this new car that I got in Louisville, and, I'm still not great with the Bluetooth through the dashboard. And so then he started to help me with the, he said, put it in park. And then it'll grab. He's telling me how he's trying to help me. It was great. It was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, that is great. I wasn't getting that kind of help from this.
I love it. Well, Johnny, you know, you hit all the, you know, the notes about everything that went on, and you know, people were worried. Oh well, there's not going to be as much. The handle's going to be off, and this is going to be. And in the meantime, we ended up with, you know, just a tremendous. The Preakness itself was the most interesting betting race, really, when it came to Saturday. I thought the overall wagering interest and potential was a little better on Friday, and I did better on Friday than I did on Saturday, but personally. But it, you know, there were plenty of opportunities. Give us some thoughts, though. Let's get to the feature, and then we'll work our way around. You know, what was your reaction to, you know, first of all, to the board, which was as crazy a big race board as you'll ever see?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, we had a monitor in the Express Bet select area. We had a monitor that showed the Preakness odds from, I want to say, like, Friday, late, mid-afternoon,
right.
Friday, all the way through. And it was all, you know, it was on that channel, and it was always there. So I entertained myself by looking up and kind of checking in every once in a while to see the shifts of how the odds have changed. And much like the Derby, they didn't change very much at all from what we saw early on. And people remarked early on, some of our select players, they're sharp players, and it's great to talk to some of those guys about, you know, what they see in the odds board. And everyone remarked how unusual the odds were. And then the early suggestion was, well, this will change. You know, Everfast should be 50 to 1. Shouldn't be 20, 25 to 1 or whatever it was at the time. You know, some of these other ones, Market King should be 100 to 1 or 70 to 1. Or, you know, and they have Market King hanging up at 25 to 1 for much of the time. So there were some, you know, it was a strange board. It was almost like in one of the, I think it was, someone mentioned that it's similar to what happened as kind of, it almost was as kind of a reaction to Mind That Bird winning, where for many years there, for a significant stretch, we didn't have anyone in the Derby who was like over 40 to 1, I want to say. You know, 30 to 1, 40 to 1. It just didn't happen. And then this year we finally had, you know, through the magic of stewards, we finally had a big price winner, a horse who was actually, you know, over 50 to 1 on the board. So it's almost like the public finally forgot that a big price horse could win, or they finally ran, they were tired of chasing those long shots. And then here we come to the Preakness, and it's almost like they've been frightened by what happened at the Derby, or alerted, I mean, frightened is not the word, but alerted to the fact that long shots can run well in these races. So we didn't see any outlandish prices. And we had a favorite in this race, Improbable, who was, I want to say, 3 to 1 much of the way through the you know, Friday into Saturday, all the way up into the race, finished off at 5 to 2, but was 3 to 1 much of the way. So that's a really, considering it's Baffert and Smith and coming out of the Derby, the highest finisher out of the Derby in this race, I thought that was telling you that Improbable was not hot. It was not a hot horse by any means. But neither was anyone else, in my estimation. I mean, obviously, Bourbon War took perhaps the morning line was a bit high, and then people kind of gravitated to him. He was almost between 5 and 6 to 1 finally, and I thought that was a little short. If I was going to look at somebody who I thought was short, I thought he was a little short. I thought War of Will was a generous price at 6 to 1. I'm not past posting either. I envisioned, you and I spoke Friday night, Wednesday, after the draw, and we kind of said, improbable, we had it, like, you asked me, I said 2 to 1. That's what I thought. War of Will, I had second choice at 4 to 1. You know, so, okay, when it's 6, which is a decent price, because second choice went to Bourbon War, and I didn't see that beforehand. I didn't think that was correct in my handicapping. Always Mining at 6.5 to 1, that made sense. You know, Always Mining a War of Will that close. War of Will ended up 6.10 to 1. Always Mining War of Will that close. Yeah, I get it. He's a local hero, and he did look good winning his races, and he's going on a hot streak. So the question was the competition. Right? When he steps up, what's going to happen? So I would have rather seen him like more at 8 to 1. I was expected, and other than that, I think that the most notable thing is that there were no 41. There was 130 to 1, and barely 31-90 to 1 market game. No 40 to 1. No 50 to 1s. Which, you know, I find that very unusual. 13-horse field, second leg of the Triple Crown. It's a phenomenon I don't really... I wish I could tell you I understood it, but other than the fear factor or the alert factor or the reactionary factor to what happened in the Derby, I don't know of a better explanation.
I don't either necessarily. It was an odd, and I'm just highlighting. I got the 4 horses within the range of $2.30. Bourbon War 5.60, then 6.10 for War of Will, 6.60 Always Mining, and 7.90 for Owendale. Then you had the 3 horses grouped in the teens, 12 to 1, 13 to 1, 14 to 1. Another Twist of Fate was 14. Win 13 and change, and Warrior's Charge 12.60. This was a really odd, very strange board. And, you know, one of the other things that was happening was the numbers. Dave Joseph was sending out missives with the Preakness numbers that were on track. It was not the system-wide, agglomerated totals, but they were very much in line with, you know, with the way things were once the, you know, the commingled numbers became available after the Dixie went official.
Right. We so often think that the on-track crowd, and we people of a certain age who are used to, like the old saying about the New York bettors are the sharpest bettors. That was an old-time maxim. You know, those New York, you know, when you saw the prices from New York, those New York players are razor sharp. Well, you know, and as far as the local horse, well, Always Mining is a local star. He's going to get more. All that stuff is kind of out of the window nowadays, because the wagering is, it's from everywhere. The local is in there. Certainly it's affected, but the pools are everywhere. And so it all gets mingled together, and so that local slant gets kind of overridden by the wave of money that comes in from around the world, actually. We had an interesting discussion, and this might be something that, I don't know if you're interested or not, but I found it interesting. Friday night, Jeremy Plunk brought up, he's talking about, he did some interviews on the VSiN network, and he brought up the idea of the concept, which I've heard so often in the sports wagering world. I never kind of really applied it to racing, but in the sports wagering world, you have a game, and now that sports wagering is kind of growing, not kind of, now that sports wagering is growing, there's the sharps, and the regulars, and the sharps are explained by the amount of money wagered on a team, and that certainly is where makes the line change, is the amount of money that's wagered on both sides. But the favoritism is displayed by the number of tickets sold on a particular team. So you've got two ways of looking at a game, the sharps and the squares. So the sharps perhaps have wagered more money on this team, but they sold vastly more tickets on the other team, which is kind of a unique, phenomenon. It would be interesting to, obviously we can't kind of break it down. I don't know. It's a concept that's worth thinking about. Where did the money go in the tickets? But where did the tickets go? What were the sharps betting? What were the squares betting? Was improbable the favorite with the squares? In other words, were there more tickets sold on improbable, but more money bet elsewhere? Well, obviously, there couldn't have been more money bet elsewhere because improbable is the favorite, and that's based on the money. But did that money come from just a few number of tickets? Is not the right word, but you get the concept.
Sure.
I don't know if I explained it well enough, but I try. Anyway, that's kind of an interesting thing. When applied to racing, where we have, in the previous we had 13 entities, and we have a favorite. But is that favorite, is he a sharp favorite or a square favorite? My guess is he's more of a square favorite. But I don't know. I don't know. He certainly wasn't a dominant favorite.
Well, the spread resulted, and having a 13-horse field certainly contributes to this, but there were a few patterns, Johnny, when you look at this chart, that are really recurrent, and that includes having yet again to hit the all button for those that are ticket builders. And I had this conversation, our friend Tony Infante, who plays contests and who's involved in partnership and is very heavily involved in the game. And he had a terrific notion, which was to key War of Will on top and then to use both of the Brad Cox runners. And, if there was a mistake, it was in not feathering them, if they're the key, using them in all three superfecta. He was going after the super and using them in all three segments, keying them second, keying them third, keying them fourth with the all button. And he had a $100 budget, and 100 would have covered this. He kind of pressed. He built a $5 super ticket going War of Will, Owendale, Warriors Charge, all Owendale Warriors Charge, and the importance of having the widest net possible, particularly for that second leg in these races, comes to pass yet again. We've had the Dallas Stewart regular visit invasion to run second. In this case, it was Dale Romans. In fact, Dale on Wednesday even invoked First Dude, who did the exact same thing going back, 7 years, 6 years. that big price second comes basically in to haunt people in their ticket building. But Owendale third, Warriors Charge ran a incredible race. To be fourth on that pace and to only get beat three lengths was really a courageous effort. And they get back 99,000 of the money that they had to pony up. They, you know, the supplement 60,000 to supplement Warriors Charge, and the whole 10 strike team. I mean, they had so much fun, and of course Sol Kumin tied in with them, but the partners in 10 strike, just a thrill of a lifetime to even be there. Marshall Graham and his people absolutely vindicated in the idea of going ahead and supplementing to be involved in this race.
Well, you know, I have a couple of comments on the things you said. Certainly, Brad Cox finishing third and fourth in the Preakness Superfecta, you know, reinforces that long-held belief that two Cox are better than one.
You know, you've been trying this joke for a week, and it didn't work. It didn't work on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Some people like it. Some people like it.
They're just being nice.
No. I never. As far as the way this race turned out, I did a little self-flagellation because, not because I liked Everfast. I did not like Everfast. I did not use Everfast. And I went back and looked, certainly when the race was over, you go back and look at the BP. Could I have used this horse? Yes, I could have. Had I hit the all button, I could have used this horse. That's the only way I could have used Everfast. War of Will absolutely was one of my, you know, horses that I thought was very dangerous. Owendale was a throw-in, a use. Warrior's Charge was one of my danger horses. I thought he was incredibly dangerous in the race. In fact, in my my write-up on the race, I said the vulnerable favorite is improbable. I said you can't ignore War of the Will. And the exotic ad is number three, Warrior's Charge. For Superfecta lovers only, at Bourbon War, Owendale, Always Mining, and Signalman. That was all well and good. I had no Everfast. And the horse that I thought should run well, I was totally wrong. I thought another Twist of Fate would run well in this race. We forced the matter. I don't think that Trouble did him any favors. But when push came to shove, he wasn't around. So after the race, you know, they used to call Willie Mays to say, hey, kid. After the race, they called me to say, what, old man? Because I was like, hey, what? Oh, yeah, Everfast? What are you talking about? And then I remembered a stat in the wager guide. And I usually go through and I take all these wager guide stats and I put them on my PPs. Well, there was a wager guide stat on the first page of expert opinions, Bob Neumeier's page. I know this. In five of the last six Preakness stakes, a horse has rallied from last to finish second or third. Well, you know, now we can just about add that. Six of the last seven Preakness stakes, a horse has rallied from last to finish second or third. I mean, you know, if you know that fact, if you know that going in, don't you, and if you're building Superfectas and you're looking for prices, and don't you look at who might be last early? Now, maybe there may have been three or four candidates, but wouldn't you include some of those just in case, in the two and three spot just in case? No, not this guy. Nope, I didn't do it. Anyway, I, you know, and then a year after the race, people say, well, you know, Romans put him in at the last minute, and he wouldn't do that unless, you know, he thought the horse was doing well and that he had a chance. Yes, that is correct. It doesn't mean he's gonna. It doesn't mean he's gonna run second. Just because a trainer thinks his horse is doing well. Oh, and then the second part of that is, Dale wouldn't do that unless. No, Dale would do that because if a horse is doing well and he has a chance, he will put a horse in the race. He will allow a horse that's doing well to run a good race.
It's not just
he does.
It's not just him. It's not just him. It's also Brad Kelly. No, it's Brad Kelly. Calumet figures into this discussion.
Well, if that's the case, we've seen Dale do this with other horses.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there are horses he's taking a shot with, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And I think people should understand that when a horse runs in one, and man, this was explained to me by trainers a long time ago, that if you run a horse in a race, you think he's doing well, he's feeling good, he's doing well, you run him in a race where it turns out he can't hang with those horses, he's not good enough, and he finishes, you know, he beats one or two horses, or the point is, it doesn't damage the horse. We believe that, you know, running 10th or 11th or 12th does some irreparable damage to a horse's the psyche that they have. Not if it's one time. If you do it repeatedly, you know, besides the fact that probably this horse doesn't belong where you're running him, yes, a horse could become discouraged. But if you do it once...
I'll give you the counter even to that. Gladiator King Mejia ran him where he didn't belong repeatedly, and yet now back doing what he's supposed to do. He's a monster. Look at him. This is his third straight terrific performance sprinting, and everybody was looking to the heavier heads, Pyron and Preamble, and Gladiator King absolutely ran everybody off their feet, and except for Lexingtonian, who got him in the final jump.
Right.
And there's a perfect example. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, perfect example. So people who say, oh, you know, he ruined this horse, or running in that race ruined it. That's not really what happens. Now, if a horse becomes injured or, you know, something else happens, that's another story. But just running a healthy, sharp horse in a race that maybe the public views as being over his head, in other words, he's a long shot, that does not ruin that horse. And you know, this was explained to me a long time ago by a trainer who I asked him. I got to know, obviously, over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of trainers. Why are you doing this? You know, you're gonna ruin it. Are you afraid of... I said, aren't you afraid of ruining this horse? He said, that's not true. And this is the Hall of Fame trainer. He said, that's just not true. You know, they go out, they try. He said, it's like if you were to go, you know, race against someone that was much better than you, you would run for as long as you could. You couldn't keep up, and you would shut down. You'd say, okay, I can't do this. It wouldn't be irreparable harm. Now, you might never want to see that particular show again. It may be that kind of irreparable harm. But if you were to drop back down to where you belong, find your company, it's fine. And with these three-year-olds, we say it all the time. We know it's there. It's just really hard to predict. They're changing. They're becoming better. Some have peaked at two, and they're riding off that kind of reputation that they built up at two. Some are good at early three, and they don't really blossom. Some are good at early three. They have a little hiccup. Something goes wrong, something's interrupted, something knocks off their training. Then they come back by the time they get to Saratoga or even the Preakness, as shown by our Preakness winner. Here's a runner who, you know, was dominating New Orleans, absolutely dominating racing at the fairground, looked to be, you know, one of the top 3-year-olds at that point. He got the lead at a Derby. He had an incident. He was slightly injured in the race, comes out of the race. He's okay in a couple days, goes back to training. Well, by the time he gets to Kentucky Derby, it's now been almost 2 months since his last meaningful race, and he's trying to go a mile and a quarter for the first time in the Kentucky Derby. Well, you know, let's put the bump aside for a second. Let's just look at him going into the Kentucky Derby that way. He worked sensationally leading up to the Derby. We all remember that. He was one of the top workers going into the Derby.
Yep.
And let's put the bump aside for a second. He ran like a short horse in the Derby. He ran like he needed the race. Well, yes, he has a perfect right to need the race. His last meaningful distance race was in Louisiana. When was the Risen Star? It was 16th of February. That was his last meaningful race, and that was a mile and 16th. So, putting aside the bump, because if you think the bump affected him horribly, then you had to put him back in the Derby. If you think the bump did not affect him, that's
the Preakness, you mean.
I'm sorry, the Preakness. You had to run him back. You had to put him back in the Preakness. If you don't think the bump bothered him, which I didn't think it bothered him that much. In other words, I thought he recovered and he was still running, but I thought my estimation was he was a short horse. So with that under his belt, coming back, hey, this guy's dangerous. And drawing the rail and being able to just drop into a similar position as in the Derby, except what else was different this time? He was relaxed. He wasn't pulling. In the Derby, he was pulling. And part of Tyler's, Tyler Gaffleone's urge to get out from where he was, not only were they turning into the stretch, but he wanted a clear path to run, but this guy was pulling on him, had been pulling on him the whole race. He wanted to get him out so he could run. He didn't want to have to sit any longer inside. So, either way, if you didn't like, you know, War of Will, if you thought that the bump was not that big a deal, which certainly it was a deal. I didn't think it was that big a deal. But if he needed that race, if you could look at the handicapping, and if you thought to yourself, he might go back to these races in New Orleans, he's one of the ones in the Preakness, for sure. I was thinking that there's no better example. I mean, if you take that post-Derby taxi clip of his visit, the segment, his visit with you, and then you take the post-Preakness visit with you, and you put them together, put them side by side. There's no better example of the old saying, winners tell jokes, losers say deal.
I wasn't going to stress all that too much, but it was wonderful, actually, and people loved. I told him afterward 2 weeks ago. I said, people, you know, he said, I hope I wasn't too. I said, no, you were great, and you know, people love hearing that. It makes them understand how much, you know, how important this is, and that this is, you know, for a lot of us, it's something that we enjoy, and it's a, you know, hobbyist or, you know, serious avocation, however you want to identify it. But, you know, for them, it's their lifeblood, and that was evident in his reaction to, you know, people at that point. You know, saying that it was possible that, I mean, I suggested certainly that Gaffleone contributed, the exact words I used were contributed to the scrum. And he did by going, he was trying to anticipate a seam, that was there when he went to anticipate it, and then just that quickly it wasn't there because maximum security was getting out. And there's no fault here. It's race flow. That's what some people are so eager to, including a completely idiotic attack on Saez that was, I mean, so stupid and ill-conceived that I submarined that but good the other day. I mean, I just amazed at people twisting themselves into pretzels for the attention. But this is how the game, it unfolds. We know every day that there's those spots and those moments. It's just that this one comes in under the ultimate spotlight.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, how you can't make this stuff up. That Kyler is at the end with and more will to find themselves in such an eerily similar situation to the Derby. First of all, they draw the rail, which everyone was like, how did that happen? What are the chances? Sending us scurrying for our calculators on our iPhones, whatever, to figure out the odds. And then that he should get the kind of trip which was so similar to what he had in the Derby, and this time staying inside instead of angling out. So, when you watch these races and you compare them, the jockey learned. He's a young rider. He's a relatively young rider. He's accomplished a lot, but he's young. He's learning. Did he do anything wrong in the Derby? No, I agree with you. He wanted, as I said, the horse was pulling. He wanted to get out of there. He got out of there, and then what he saw room, and when he started the maneuver, there was room. And then there wasn't. So it was like, it was a good idea at the time, but in a few strides, and people have to realize how quickly these things change. These horses are not, you can't just wheel them side to side and back and forward without consequences. So, but then to take that learning experience, take it over to the Preakness,
yep,
to have a much fitter horse, to have a much more
to work with
horse. Yes, and to be, and I also think that it's worth mentioning. Not only did Mark Cassie come to the support of Jockey Gaffney, but he also was adamant about his horse, and I think that the people who want to say, they give the impression that people in racing don't care about their horses, that they use these horses as pawns in some big game. The majority do not. And the example is, Cassie talked about this horse like he is his son. I mean, I wanted that. When he talked about his son playing baseball, it sounded like he was talking about Warp Will. It was interchangeable. He wants his horse to have the best chance. I want him to have a chance to show what he can do. Put him in coach, my kid can play. kind of that thing. And he got the chance to do it, Saturday, and he did it. He showed up. And today, Mark sounded like a proud papa, talking about what his son has accomplished. So, take that, you people who think, we don't care about our animals. It really irks me because I've seen the care. I've seen the care every day for 35 years. I was there, and saw the care that these horses get. Not just the stars, everyone.
Well, and Johnny, before we wrap very quickly from the wagering guide, the big winner, John White. John, with the straightforward among his $100 budget, $40 win bet on War of Will, and that's good for close to $300. So, John, with the nice pop.
John is incredibly good at making money in these guys. He really does a fantastic job. He's got a tremendous, I don't have stats, But I know that every year, when I look at each guide, John has turned a profit again. It may not always be huge, but every year he's turned a profit, and it just amazes me that he can do it. Now, some guys are taking or playing in a different manner. Some guys are taking swings. Like Dick Girardi, he had war of will over probable, and he suggested a $100 exact, war, a cold exact, a war of will over probable. Well, you got it half right, but the ticket still wasn't cash. You know, we had two guys pick war of will on top of our experts. Everyone else had improbable, and you went with always mining. And as far as looking at the total top, no one had ever fast. How could they?
You have to adjust. Right.
Well, but I'm also not going to say that anyone's going to have that much fast because, you know, I was around a lot of guys who wager a tremendous amount of money during the year, and I looked at them after the race, you know, like, the say I was the say what kid, and nobody could say what. Nobody could say what had happened.
Yeah. Johnny, terrific party in Pimlico, and I know there were some hiccups in parts of the building, and I'm sure that that'll be magnified by people in making their complaints from that standpoint. But a lot of what you needed to go right went right, and I hope everybody enjoyed. And I didn't get to see you and Gail on Saturday, and Tina was disappointed on that front, but hope you guys had a great time.
Well, I apologize to Tina for this. I didn't move around at all. I was not feeling very good as far as moving. I didn't go anywhere. You know, early in the week, I didn't do my usual rounds, let's put it that way. I was limited this year. I will say, though, about, you know, people, the facility and all, they did spruce it up this year. They did go out of their way to be the best they could with the facility. We all know the story of the facility. Nothing should be a shock. It's like going to visit someone in intensive care and saying, you know, you don't look so good. Yeah, I'm in intensive care. I shouldn't look good, you know? So, you know, I think we've got one more year on the schedule, and then we're going to find out what happens.
Yeah. We'll revisit it as appropriate, and enjoyed the time I got to spend with you there, and thanks for being part of Alibi Morning, and we'll start to point toward Belmont get this Triple Crown Odyssey over. See if we're going to have three different winners, or maybe even four different winners. it marches on.
We're still going to have the Belmont.
They are going to run the Belmont. Yes, okay. Yes, okay. Yeah. They're going to call it the Metropolitan Handicap this year. That's
that's worth the price of admission alone.
Big time, and it's going to share the spotlight, to say the least. Johnny D, everybody, XB Johnny D, and then the Express Bet team. We'll talk to John White tomorrow, and congratulate him and more. Johnny, feel better. All right, get healthy.
Thank you.
Johnny D. Let's take a break. Coming up on the top of the hour, and we'll spend it with Jack Sisterson, Joe Bianca, and Brad Cox. Stay with us. Recapping Preakness, we got tons to do the next several days. Want to get in as many as we can, and still haven't even talked about some of the big performances. Brad Cox's visit will cover off the most eye-popping effort, Covfefe, which was just amazing. And of course, Brad also winning the Alaire DuPont with My Lady Curlin, part of the big three-win day for Curlin as a sire. The Pimlico Special recap, too, probably tomorrow for Steve Asmussen. And I had a really fun talk on was that Friday or Thursday? I think it was Thursday. Had a really fun conversation. Yeah, it was. It was Thursday. Steve was schooling horses, and we talked a whole bunch. It was kind of a broad range of topics, but I went up to thank him for that visit after Derby weekend. And I said, God, I said, you were so great. I said, everybody loved it. He said, I got more texts. He goes, I got text numbers. I don't even know who they were, texted me and said, you were great. You were so funny on Bick. It was great. But he had a nice weekend, and tenfold, even though this was a dry fast version of Pimlico, and last year in the Preakness, he ran so well on the wet track, but tenfold. Want to thank Clocker John. John's visit, I'd like to think that a lot of you latched right on Thursday, you know, after the Alibi breakfast. They had that terrific 20-plus minutes with John, and he lauded tenfold's approach coming into this race. And that was part of the very good Friday. Had a nice brought back a bunch on Friday, gave some of it back on Saturday, but tenfold's performance in that Pimlico Special. So we'll talk to Steve, and then he came back, of course, New York Central, the four-year-old with the Maryland Sprint win. So another nice weekend for Steve. However, Brad Cox, the trainer bonus, which we discussed, how Cox was poised to do well. I haven't seen a written confirmation, but I believe that Brad swiped that trainer bonus. Let's take a timeout. Jack Sisterson, he himself having a good a darn good year already. He'll join us next. Hour 3. Back after this.